All right, we're actually getting started now. This is Micha Sifri from Personal Democracy Forum. Welcome to everybody who's on the call. What I'm asking is that when you get on, if you would please mute your phone, except for Gina, by hitting star six, and then after we have a bit of an introductory conversation, we'll ask people to unmute if you have a question, and we're going to try, since we only have about 20 or 25 people on this call, to do things in a pretty loose way. The ReadyTalk system, for those of you who are on your computers, you'll see that you can actually enter a chat room and post questions there or talk laterally with each other during the conversation. And I am not going to try and control the muting or unmuting of your phones from this end, since it's a fairly intimate group. I should mention that this call is being recorded and that the MP3 of the call will be available for people who miss it later if you want to refer back to it. I'm very pleased to welcome as our guest for the inaugural PDF Network call, Gina Bianchini, who is the CEO and co-founder of Ning.com, one of the fastest-growing online social networks in the world with, well, last we spoke, more than 600,000 individual communities on the site. I have a feeling the number has grown. I should say that Gina will be with us for a half hour. Unfortunately, she has a conflict that will take her away from us at approximately 2. And what we are going to do is we're going to continue the call without her at that point and continue to share some of our thoughts and observations about best practices for organizing on online social networks. And for those of you who choose to stay on the call for the second half hour, we're also very interested, since we're just starting this series of skill development calls for the PDF Network, to give you an idea of what else we have planned coming up and to get your feedback as well. So with no further ado, I'm going to ask Gina to come on board. And Gina, if you would sort of open things up for us and describe a bit about Ning and how it's growing, and then maybe zero in a bit on who's using it for politics and what you're seeing seems to work well for people who are trying to build a thriving social network on Ning that has a political purpose. Gina? Okay, we're waiting for Gina.
She was there a second ago.
Okay, Gina, maybe you have to unmute your phone. Are you there?
Hello?
Okay, Gina.
You can hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you now.
I accidentally muted it, and then you said how you can mute something, but not how to unmute it.
Oh, I think it's literally a toggle, star six, either way.
That's what I actually kept doing. It's actually pound six to unmute yourself.
Pound six, okay.
As I just learned. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. So as Micha mentioned, I am the co-founder and CEO of Ning. We are a online platform that enables people to create their own social networks and really their own social experiences for the most important people and interests in their lives. And today we have close to 1 million social networks on the Ning platform. And they are really being created around a diversity of topics, interests, languages, locations, and it's pretty powerful to watch how it's being used today and something we're incredibly grateful for. When creating a social network on Ning, there's really sort of three very, very simple steps: naming your network, choosing whether your network is public or private, what language you want to put it in, what is it about. Then you have a choice of 14 different features, which is going to be much greater here shortly with something that we're introducing, in your own unique combination of features. And features include photos, videos, events, groups, members, chat. Every social network comes with profiles, blogging, really in whatever the right combination you want those features for your unique purpose and your unique social network. And then lastly, infinite visuals, freedom and visual controls. So, you know, we look at the goal being with Ning as a platform, infinite customizability, beautiful design, and easy creation and moderation is really kind of the three key things that we're striving for. We've been incredibly fortunate, and certainly in light of this past presidential election season, that politicians and activists are, and political and public advocacy are really starting to use social networks on Ning to drive forth different perspectives, organize people, and where we're really seeing it utilized in a pretty interesting way is around identifying, organizing, and connecting the, you know, the super users or the super advocates or the, you know, most passionate loyalists. So an example of that would be the Pickens Plan, and they have created a social network on Ning, push.pickensplan.com. I should have mentioned you can use your own domain name on Ning. You can take off our advertising, which is how we make the vast majority of our money today, and replace it with either an ad-free social network or one that has your own ads on it. And the Pickens Plan has 200,000 members on it today, and the way that the Pickens Plan used those 200,000 members was to really organize regional outreach, send and talk about sort of the key messages with that group of super super users or super advocates, their wind power energy, as they called it, and have called it, and they were able to, for customer acquisition and for acquisition of these super users, it is, every social network on Ning is set up to be virally distributed through invitations, through sharing, through embeddable widgets, so embeddable video players like YouTube or embeddable photo slideshows a la Flickr or Slide or other services that are out there. The differentiation on a social network on Ning is that it's all branded for your purpose, your social network's brand, if you will. Pickens Plan was able to take advantage of all of those viral distribution mechanisms, as well as layer on top of it other more targeted and specialized advocate acquisition. They ended up spending about $400,000 in this acquisition work, which was about a tenth of what they had spent on any other public affairs campaign that was out there and that they had done previously. And, you know, from their perspective, the ROI on this social network and this really making a social network the key component of their online strategy was the wind energy budget that was allocated in the stimulus bill.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I would say, you know, from their perspective, a pretty significant success story. We're now seeing a number of not only political advocacy or public affairs advocacy, but also candidates individually taking advantage of a social network on Ning to be able to really organize, communicate, connect, and share, really understanding who their members are and what they can do to mobilize them. So maybe I'll stop there in terms of opening remarks and how people are using Ning today more broadly and more specifically in the political realm, and open it up for questions.
Great, Gina. Thank you. This is Micha Sifri. I'm going to ask the first question. How much information does Ning provide to an organization that's using it in terms of individual user data? You know, how much can you track, and can you export that information elsewhere? You know, what kind of controls do you have?
Absolutely. So we are different than any other service out there in terms of when you create a social network on Ning, we look at it as they are your members and our members. You actually define what the profile questions are or what the registration questions are. We ask all of the social networks and all the people joining social networks on Ning, you know, some very basic demographic information on people, and then we give that to our network creators by default. But then there's an opportunity to ask much more specialized questions that are unique to the purpose of your social network on Ning. So in the case of the Pickens plan, it would be, you know, what are you most passionate about, or what is it about wind energy that is important to you, or anything else that is of interest. That information is all available to you as the network creator or creator on Ning of the social network. And so you can export it in a CSV file. You can merge it with other data in the database in which you're organizing your member list, for example. That is all information that is available to you, and that's quite different than what is happening, certainly, and what other services provide along the lines of data on your particular social network or online community.
Right, and just to follow up to that, does Ning integrate with any fundraising platforms? I mean, if somebody wants to use this to generate donations for either a cause or a candidate?
Yes, absolutely. So we have something that we're releasing basically in early April called Ning Apps. And Ning Apps are based on the Open Social platform and the Open Social standards. But what is different about our implementation of it is we are creating Ning Apps to be something that can be used across the social network on Ning. So we are integrating via Ning Apps with Salesforce.com, Convio, Constant Contact, and making it really, really easy for specifically political organizations to be able to look at and integrate email functionality and email lists with their social network on Ning.
Great. Okay, let's open it up to questions from folks that are on the phone. I'm going to ask people just to unmute, say your name, and hopefully keep your question fairly short, and we're just going to open it up, and whoever gets in first gets the first question.
There are no questions.
Nope.
Okay, I'll try one. This is
Wait.
Karen Jagoda from eVoter Institute.
Hey, Karen, go ahead.
So I'm thinking all this flexibility is really fabulous, but in the political world, people are still tiptoeing into the social network realm. And do you think all this functionality is intimidating to them, or do you think it gives them the tools they really need to design a solution that works best for them?
It's a great question. I mean, from my perspective, and what we try to do is make it as incredibly easy as possible to create a social network. So it's one click to create a social network on Ning, and we default in terms of features, photos, videos, events, members, and latest activity. From our perspective, the idea is that get people in, get them a social network that they can look at, play around with, use, experiment with. And then as they have specific use cases or specific things that they want to do with it, then there's that additional functionality that is available. So we try, and I think one of the reasons why we have as many social networks as we have is because we've really been able to, on the front end of the creation process, make it as easy as possible and make it as straightforward and simple in getting up and running. But then as you start to peel back the onion and the layers of what is available, you have the ability to really customize it and make it uniquely yours in the ways that you want to.
Great. Another question?
I have a question, Melinda Wittstock from Capital News Connection and Ask Your Lawmaker. I just want to know, what's your experience with news organizations using Ning? Can you speak to that?
So in terms of actually using it with people directly, like consumers directly, or more in terms of organizing news organizations themselves?
Well, I guess we're kind of a hybrid because we do a lot of interactive stuff, a widget called Ask Your Lawmaker. Let's anyone ask any questions they want of their congressmen on Capitol Hill and their senators. and we also obviously report the news for public radio, and we want to get citizens more and more involved in not only helping to set the policy agenda, but helping to set the news agenda and just involved in the debate and the dialogue around our content. We're also a nonprofit, so we're also interested in it in terms of how it might help with some of our fundraising as well. But just in terms of news content, do you know of anybody that's using this as kind of, using Ning or using social networks around news content to integrate with the people who consume news, I guess, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, it's an interesting question because on one hand, I think that the whole what is, you know, people collaborating and talking and putting forth different opinions, how much of that is becoming news on some level or the things that people want covered. What we've seen, and one of the features that we certainly offer is the ability to pull in RSS feeds, which is the simplest thing that you could possibly do in terms of utilizing news and information sources as sort of the topics of conversation within a social network. Or alternatively, we've also seen social networks being used to organize petitions and different things that have generated news. I would say two ways that we've sort of seen people do some pretty interesting things. I would not say that a social network is the most obvious choice of software solutions for just consuming news, I would say. You can certainly find it. There's certainly RSS feeds. You can pull it in, and people have used that very, very successfully. The other thing that's been interesting is we've actually seen journalists organize. There's something called the Frontline Club in London that is a physical club for independent journalists, and it's a hotel. It has a restaurant, and they've actually turned and had a online social network component on Ning. And what they've been able to do is, as journalists are traveling all over the world and specifically, you know, covering all of these different events globally, that the journalists are writing in, they're sharing their photographs, they're also able to listen to the speaker events that this club has from London. And so there's a tight connection wherever people are when they're traveling around the world. So that's not directly how are people consuming news via social networks? But at the same point, I think it's a really interesting model for how people are organizing around the things that they truly care about and the things that they identify with.
Yeah, I guess by way of follow-up, I mean, we're kind of an unusual news organization in the sense that we're actually asking citizens, too. We're collecting questions from citizens that we, our journalists, then put to congressmen. So we have this kind of involvement increasingly of people kind of influencing our news agenda.
Yes.
And then
something like that makes a ton of sense in terms of both, you know, you're using the widget that you have, for example. You know, you could even use it to pull it into a social network and a social destination that you guys control, brand, have as sort of the place to go for a more in-depth conversation, blog post, whatever works for your particular purpose and need.
Okay.
Gina, this is Misa. I want to just pick up on Melinda's question and see if I can generalize it a little. Would it be fair to say that for a project like hers, to work well on Ning, that it needs a person or an engine that the community is kind of coming together around, right? So the Pickens plan, it's obviously got a, you know, charismatic individual behind it. It's got a, you know, specific cause. But if you think of Team Sarah, you know, the Sarah Palin fan site, or you think of GovLoop, which is this social network for people who work in government, it's got an individual who's kind of every day driving the conversation on the site, and it's got sort of a unifying theme. And, you know, if I were imagining the Melinda's project using Ning, it would be, you know, who's the most prominent journalist in the news network, you know, who has an audience already, right, who could basically say to his or her listeners, you know, come hang out with me on my social network site. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think that speaks to what I believe and what we've seen time and time again in terms of which social networks take off and which ones don't, it doesn't matter who you are, but there has to be at least, you know, one to a small group of pretty active, passionate, authentic people that are driving that social network. It is the social network has to get to about, you know, call it 50 to 150 people before it can be its own self-sustaining thing. But interestingly, after that, it will take off on its own, and it will continue to grow. We've seen that time and time again. But in terms of creating something, putting it up there, you know, kicking things off with a couple forum posts and just expecting that people will come, that doesn't work all that effectively, which shouldn't be a sort of a surprise to anyone. So I recommend that people really look at what they're doing within creating a social network as, is this a unique point of view? Are we asking unique questions? Do we want to have a differentiated conversation? Or is there a specific reason why this group of people wants to connect and communicate within, you know, more of a confined or a structured setting where the topic is very, very clear? The clearer the topic, the more compelling the social network is, and we've seen that across the board for the last 2 years.
Okay, other questions?
Yeah, am I unmuted?
Yes, we can hear you. Who's speaking?
That's great, yeah. Tom Crowell, Shigura.com. And I'm interested in the potential and I feel the need for enabling political, if you want to call it micro contribution, in other words, political contributions under a dollar, especially in a social network framework as a counterforce to lobbying, since the social networks can be either now formed on an ad hoc basis or very quickly, and it's really a fundamental dissociation, and then making that transaction viable. The solution to that, to me, seemed to be to find a way to motivate a pre-funded commons dedicated account. That is an account that is functional both for charity as well as political contribution, not only the microtransaction, but for any and all of that sort of transaction. And,
okay, so the question is, does Ning support micropayments? Is that
well,
right?
Well, I don't believe that they do. I suppose what I'm
okay. Well, Gina, let's see. Sorry, Tom.
Okay, and is advancing my prototype, which is out there and getting.
Can I address just the issue of transactions, though?
Yes.
So what
sure.
Are the things
I've been looking at it quite a bit.
Great. So even going back to the question prior around donations and fundraising, one of the things that we have found and seen amongst a number of the nonprofits that have created very, very dynamic, active, vibrant social networks on Ning is that the donation piece is one of many things that people can do to contribute, and especially, I would say right now, and we've seen this accelerate in the last few months, the fact that people have the ability online from their homes or from their offices to contribute to something that they're passionate about and that they truly believe in with more than just money has been huge. Additionally, the fact that there is still a donate button there has also been huge. So being able to combine fundraising with something that is a much more optional in terms of other ways that they can also contribute creates a much more loyal base of users, customers, people who are a part of the organization. Layering on top of that, the microtransaction piece. So this is happening across social networks today with virtual gifts and virtual goods, and certainly something that we will be rolling out across the social networks on Ning are the ability and is the ability to take advantage of, you know, a network creator to member transactions or the ability for members to, you know, purchase things from that social network in very small increments. And I would definitely encourage anybody who's thinking about this kind of stuff to look at the virtual gifts model that is happening in places like Gaia, High Five, certainly Facebook with their virtual gifts. And all of those things are actually really, really interesting and viable, not only here in the United States where it's a bit smaller of a market, but certainly internationally with things like Tencent and QQ and other things along those lines in Asia and beyond.
Okay.
Speaking of fundraising, this is Andrew Roche from Personal Democracy Forum, Mika's partner, and I read somewhere recently that NIG Apps is coming in April using
yes.
Open Social,
mm-hmm.
Make it easy for political organizations to use fundraising capabilities on NIG. Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So NIG Apps basically is going to give network creators on NIG the ability to choose from 50 different features, and then 100, and then 200. Certainly, our goal is to do it in a way that we uniquely understand, not to overwhelm people with different options. But in addition to the email integration that I mentioned before, we're also going to be offering features from Social Vibe, PayPal, and Pink Giving to be able to pull in and have a much more integrated experience with donations. And then from there's a whole set of things that we want to do in terms of prompting and enabling the network creator to be able to prompt members to take different actions, which hopefully would also include from a political and an activism perspective, you know, potentially making certain donations.
Great. Gina, we only have you for a couple more minutes, right?
Yes.
Okay. I want to ask you a sort of a follow-on question. If someone joins NIG and starts using it to build their social network, what kinds of support does NIG provide to community creators? Is there premium support available? Do you have a helpline? I mean, you know, where do people go when they're already waist deep and trying to figure out, you know, how to do a better job of what they're doing?
Absolutely. So we have today a very comprehensive help center. Plus, we have free support all the way up to, significantly higher levels of premium support from there. We are actually launching premium support tomorrow. It's tomorrow.
How big is NIG in terms of staff?
Yeah, so we have 125 people today, primarily in engineering, but we have a, 25-person support and community advocacy team. And one of the things that we'll continue to be doing is, as part of really sort of blowing out and making, you know, continued investments in the premium support and strategic relationships consulting that we do, is culling all of the information and the data that we have around what makes effective, successful, vibrant social networks and sharing that with our partners. So, in one of the benefits of having, you know, a million social networks on NIG and being the largest provider of social networks on the Internet today is the fact that we actually have a very good data set for what works and what does not work in creating and cultivating social networks, and, you know, certainly happy to work with people along those lines.
Great. Okay. Do we have time for one more question, Gina, or we need to let you go? Okay. Who's got a question?
I'd only add the factor of, is there any ability for geographical networking, especially along electoral lines, because I think that ties in.
Right. Is there a way to geo-target people? Go ahead.
Yeah. So one thing you can do is certainly within the social network itself, everybody fills out their location. That can be a required question on your social network. And then we have, obviously, advanced member search, so people can find different people in their areas. Additionally, it's a great thing to do in terms of, list integration at that point in terms of being able to target people in a particular geographic area, create a social network that is only for people in that geographic area or groups for just people within that geographic area, and then be able to certainly match up the data because you have that uniquely on NIG as it relates to location. But obviously, you know, we see across many different categories location being really, really important, and that's a key component of what we offer with NIG.
Great. Okay. Anyone else dying to ask Gina a question?
This is Brian Sislak from Mayfield Strategy Group. Just one real quick one to ask if there are any plans to integrate OpenID on Ning, or perhaps Ning would be an OpenID provider maybe someday?
Yeah, we're certainly looking at it. Our reason for not having implemented it yet is the feeling that the user experience is just not quite there yet. So we've also seen a number of different providers implement OpenID and not see a lot of traction with that. So it's certainly out there. It's certainly something that we're paying very careful attention to, but also feel like until we get sort of the user experience to be something that is as seamless as possible, it's probably not going to be a top priority for us for the at least the very short term.
Great. Listen, Gina, I know we have to let you go since it's just after 2 o'clock. I want to thank you for making the time and remind everybody that you're going to be keynoting at the Personal Democracy Forum conference this June 29th and 30th in New York. So we'll all have another chance to talk and hear from you and obviously pepper you with our questions. So we really appreciate you making the time.